And good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another edition of Warrior Connection. Well, you know, hey, we're in the middle of a blizzard here in Illinois. Also talking to our producer out there. They've also got snow in New York and a little bit all over the country. So we're in incredible snow and extremely cold weather. It's coming in. So I thought tonight what we talk about is cold weather survival and protection. How do we take care of ourselves? What do we need to do? Once upon a time, a long time ago, I had the pleasure of being a winter operations instructor for the Illinois Army National Guard. Went through the instructor course. I mean, you had to be an EMT, you had to be an intermediate-level cross-country skier, intermediate-level alpine or downhill skier in order to do it. And it was an incredible opportunity. That's over 30 years ago, a long time ago. Anyhow, cold weather survival and everything else, what do we need to worry about? Well, right now in our temperatures we have in the winter, any time that you start getting below the ambient body temperature, and again, the body temperature wants to be maintained at 98.6 degrees, so anytime you can start getting the body cooled down, you can start running into hypothermia problems. And that's really critical, because what we don't want happening is the body cooling off too fast or too rapidly, because that affects everything on how the body functions, especially the heart and respiratory and everything else. Very, very, very important. Well, normally in the summer months, I mean, when you get into the pool and you go swimming, you get out on a hot day, you get evaporative cooling, and the moisture that's on your body evaporates rapidly in the heat, and that's why we cool off. Well, what happens when we start getting to these extreme low temperatures? The body's ability to generate heat and make heat is compromised. And once that happens, we can start cooling off rapidly, and once the body's core temperature starts getting down to 98, 97, 96, 95 degrees Fahrenheit, we're in deep trouble. And all of the problems associated with cold weather problems then come in. So what we got to think about is what actually happens with cold weather and how does it happen? Well, let's talk about a little bit about temperature and heat generation. Normally during the summer months, again, the sun is high in the sky. We have the atmosphere and everything. We got all of the weather patterns put together to our temperature is going to be maintained, you know, in the nice 70, 60, 70, 80 degrees, 90, maybe get up to 100 degrees sometimes in some areas. Well, in that case, again, the body has to be careful. Does it overheat? Well, very easy to do that. If you get too much physical activity, again, the body starts to overheat and then you get into trouble. Well, on the other hand, what happens during the winter months is because of the location of the sun, we don't have the heating of the environment. So in other words, our temperatures are going to drop way down. And obviously during the winter months, we're seeing very cold temperatures. Here in Illinois and a lot of areas, again, in the winter months, your average temperatures are in the 30s to 40s, something like that. Might drop on down into the 10s and the 20s, depends on where you live. Obviously, if we get up in northern Minnesota, International Falls, which is kind of like the coldest point in the United States usually, the temperatures up there in the winter months can approach sub-zero temperatures. Well, that's what we're looking at happening right now. The prediction right now is we're looking at an ambient temperature on the outside during these snowstorms of 10 to 15 to 20 degrees, 25 degrees. However, along with this stuff, we have the winds, and we have extremely high winds here in Illinois and a lot of other areas, especially when it's cold. And when we start running these extremely high winds during the cold months, the body's ability to maintain heat drops rapidly. It's not that the wind chill is the actual temperature outside. It's how fast your body's going to cool down to the ambient temperature. So the faster the wind and the less clothing you have, the cooler, faster you're going to cool off. And this creates a nightmare all the way around for the body to maintain everything. It's the same in your house. If your house is not built properly, if you don't have adequate insulation, if you don't have all the holes plugged, if you don't have adequate insulation, storm windows and everything, in other words, a single pane of glass, the heat loss through all this stuff is going to be significant. And therefore, you have to keep your house warm by heating it up. Whatever you're going to be able to do is you've got hot water, gas, you've got electric, you've got a wood stove, whatever you're doing to heating it. But you have to worry about all this, maintaining the temperatures and everything else. Well, when we get to these extreme cold temperatures, as we're looking at, and you're going to go outside, if you don't have adequate clothing and adequate protection, your body's not going to be able to sustain the heat that it has available for it. Now, your body only creates heat and builds up by burning up fuel and burning up foods. So if you don't have an adequate diet, you're not going to have adequate nutrition and adequate protein and all the other carbohydrates necessary to generate the heat in your body, and your body's going to cool off. So again, the first thing that we have to worry about during the winter months is adequate nutrition. And that's extremely, extremely important. You have to have a totally well-balanced diet of all your major food groups. In other words, have all your meats, your grains, have your vegetables, give your liquids, again, your milk, all your dairy products and all this stuff. Very, very, very important. Again, how much energy you need to build and how much you need to generate depends on what your activities are doing. Now, if you're outside and it's very cold and you're just standing around, you're going to get cold because your body is not generating the heat through movement. But if it doesn't have an adequate nutrition base, it's not going to be able to generate the heat necessary through the metabolic processes in order to keep you warm. So we're just running into a whole bunch of different problems that we have to think about with cold injuries. When we look at cold injuries, again, obviously the body's temperature, constant temperature, is 98.6 degrees Fahrenheit. And again, the blood circulates everything and it gets everything going. So it's extremely important. And again, you have the food and oxygen to maintain this all the time. Now, when the skin is exposed to colder temperatures, you're going to start cooling off. If you have bare skin exposed to the ambient temperature, it's going to cool off whatever the ambient temperature is rapidly. And the more skin that's exposed, the faster your body's going to cool down. So in other words, we have to generate the heat through this stuff. But at the same time, what happens that when you start getting cold, your core temperature of the body, and the core part of the body is your heart, your lungs, your stomach, and all this stuff, basically the thoracic cavity and all this stuff, that has to be maintained at a very high temperature. Well, if you don't have adequate clothing and the body starts to drop, what's going to happen is the blood vessels are going to constrict. That's going to shunt the blood away from the fingers and the toes and the nose and the ears and put it back into the core part of the body. So you don't sense that your body is cooling off, but again, the essential blood flow to these parts of the body is not going to be there, so therefore it's going to cool off fast. So then we have a whole bunch of problems that are coming in there. Okay, again, as this gets up there. Now the body's temperature starts approaching 90 degrees, 95 degrees, we're going to start get into serious problems. And it gets much below that, death is going to be imminent. Okay, so you have to get everything worked together. So let's look at some of the different types of things we have. The first one is hypothermia. Hypothermia, again, results when the body's lost more heat than can be replaced by increasing metabolism through exercise or activities and whatever. The wind loss, the wind, again, and the wind chill drains the heat away from the body if you don't have protective clothing. This is why it's essential to wear gloves and a hat, to wear boots, to wear pants, and if you need to wear insulated underwear. Again, to maintain the body's temperature where it's not going to cool off as rapidly. Now, when you're putting clothing together, obviously what we taught a long time ago and what's been said forever and ever and ever is you want to layer your clothing. You don't want to have it tight. You start getting tight clothing on, it constricts blood flow and everything else, and that creates as many problems as it can cure. So you want to have warm clothing, but you want to have the clothing that's loose. It doesn't constrict the blood supply and blood flow and everything else. It's absolutely critical that we do everything like this.
Doug, I'm on with you.
Hey, Denise, thank you very much.
Yeah, it's been really busy around here. I'm leaving to go to D.C. tomorrow. I had to get my daughter on the plane today, trying to get everything done. It's crazy, and it's wet and cold out here.
Well, yeah, we're in the middle of a blizzard here, as you know. I mean, is the flight, were the flights flying from Denver to Washington?
It was funny. From our side of town to the airport, the sun came out. We came back, and it was snowing on our side of town still. So, yeah, cold weather can be a factor and can be a factor with the Gulf War vets. So if they don't have to go anywhere, you know what I tell people, if you don't have to go anywhere, stay home. Just read a good book, relax, enjoy until it warms back up. We've already been through one negative degree temperature out here in Denver. Hasn't gotten to the negatives here. It's just been 10, 20. Plenty cold.
Well, yeah, I mean, you've got the big problems we have at high altitude. And again, from my skiing days, you know, I love Loveland Basin and Arapaho. Those were my two ski areas out there. That's not too far from your house, is it?
Nope, not at all. Those are kind of beginner slopes. You didn't graduate to Vail and Aspen?
We did do that, but it was kind of nice because it was, you know, we were stationed at Lowry, so getting over to Arapaho and Loveland was pretty easy.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, you had to go over the Loveland Pass. There's a tunnel through there now to get to the other side of the mountain.
Oh, yeah, and they're increasing the size of the tunnel, so it'll handle traffic better. It's really going through the tunnels, you pile up. Each way you pile up getting through. But it's beautiful up there. I don't go up too often, but it is beautiful, but you've got to be prepared. And snow tires, chains when needed. Keep a shovel, you know, fold-up shovel in the trunk. Keep some blankets back there, some of the firefighter gear, the aluminum foil blankets are great. They fold up small.
I keep sleeping bags in my car year-round in a tent, but that's just, I don't know, my whole days of living out and camping all the time. I'm never without a tent or a sleeping bag or a camp stove. I don't know.
And we've got vets driving in. Hopefully the weather will be better in D.C. when we get there, but the REC meeting is Tuesday and Wednesday. And I am putting out the word, if you are in the Pennsylvania area, Indiana, Ohio, get in touch with Keith Nordic on Facebook. He's got two seats open if you want to ride with him. All you need is money for food.
Where does Keith come from? Where does he begin? Where does he live?
Up in Pennsylvania, Harrisburg area, I think. I'd have to look it up real quick. And we need as many as we can get to the RAC meeting. After 23 years, the old nurse is getting tired of only seeing less than 10 show up. And
you know, now it could be a problem for travel. I know here throughout Illinois and Indiana, I mean into Ohio, it's zero travel right now.
Yeah. So say our prayers for the guys that are on the road from Pennsylvania. We've got one flying up to meet him out of Indiana to drive with him. And so there's a couple of seats left open, guys. If you're in the Pennsylvania area, it's close by to get a ride into D.C. You only have to bring money for your food. Pretty lenient with pitching in for the gas and all. But Keith is really standing up as a senior NCO type, 101st, to get people there along the route, wherever.
That'll be excellent. Yeah, well, you know, I was just getting into a discussion on hypothermia. I mean, you've treated hypothermia before more than one time, just like I have, and, I mean, that creates a nightmare because, you know, once the body starts cooling off, we start seeing these hypothermia, and the problems with hypothermia is a person doesn't know that they're cooling off, do they?
No, they don't. I wanted to give the phone number if anybody does want to connect and drive into D.C. for the RAC.
Do that, please.
And it's 765-488-1382. And they need to call this evening because David will be leaving in the morning to fly up there. So please, if anybody wants to get into D.C. for the RAC meeting, call David Lachelle at 765-488-1382. And they're meeting up in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania area.
Now, David lives flying out of Indiana, won't he?
Right.
I think he flies out of Indianapolis. That might be a question. Right now, everything's shut down.
Yeah. So anybody in that area that wants to ride in, please give them a call. And dress warmly. It's going to be wet and cold in Washington this week for the RAC. We have, you know, we'll be introduced to the new members of the RAC. I know a couple of them already, but I won't say anything until they make their announcement at the meeting. And really, this is terrible, terrible weather out there, people. And like I said, stay in if you can. If you must, be prepared. We had the family tip their Jeep over or whatever not too long ago that we talked about. And they used their spare tire, got some wood, set a fire, put stones in it to warm it up, then they moved the stones into the car. They got through that disaster for them without any frostbite. It was amazing.
Yeah, but again, what we want to put the warning out, I mean, those individuals did survive, but they never should have been out what they were doing to begin with. You know, we got to look at some reality and using some common sense here. You know, when we look at the symptoms of hypothermia, again, the body's starting to cool down and everything else, the very first thing that you're going to have, obviously, is you're going to get the shivering, and that's, again, the body's attempt to warm up. You'll start get the teeth chattering. But then as the body starts, to, temperature starts to fall, the shivering stops and the movements become slow and clumsy. And reaction time and thinking is blurred and everything else. So the problem we've ran into with cold weather, and especially hypothermia, is you're kind of like going to sleep. You don't realize how that you're in the middle of a medical emergency that requiring heating and all this stuff rapidly. And again, obviously the respiratory starts getting into trouble, and obviously, you know, right away you're going to have a problem with the cardiac problems. Because the heart does not like to get cooled down very much. I mean, obviously in surgery they do deliberate cooling for one thing, but that's completely different under medical control versus hypothermia.
And unbelievable enough, most heat is lost from the head, people.
That's because people don't wear hats and everything, do they?
No. So get those woolly sock hats out. Get the funny flap-down hats. Keep your head warm. Keep your hands warm. The other thing I keep in the car is those hand warmers. I keep a good stock of them in the car in case anything happens, that you just crush those and they'll heat up, and you can put them in your pockets. You can put them anywhere and keep you warm.
Those are the good old chemical hand warmers. They're like in a foil package that you just break, and then they start generating heat, correct?
Right.
Yeah, I've got some of those available. Yeah, I mean, again, what we're going through, the proper clothing and all this stuff is extremely important. However, once you start do get hypothermia, and you start getting hypothermic, we've got to get the body warmed back up rapidly. You know, obviously, you know, we can use some hot chocolate or coffee. Coffee, I mean, is one of those things that it's a diuretic, so it's going to create problems. But hot chocolate and all this stuff, again, maintaining nutrition. One of the reasons, again, going back to the old cold weather survival and the stuff we talk of the winter operations, is the sleeping bag is ideal. And because you can get into the sleeping bag, and if you have to get in the sleeping bag with a person, one thing we did teach, and this is the old winter survival stuff, when you get really cold, there ain't nothing like crawling into a sleeping bag together to warm the body up. The person got hypothermia gets in with a warm body, and it works. So, you know, there's one of those odd things that we come on down. But again, you've got to warm the body up, but you can't warm the body up too fast. You could say, for example, get a warm bathtub, but you don't want to get a hot bathtub because you got to maintain the temperature. And again, you don't want to have a shock to the system, because you start getting, you know, warm up too much in dilation, then you can start going in the other way and start getting into shock, which creates a real problem. Just the whole thing. I know one of the things that we point out, and even in the cold weather months, it's even more, especially with hypothermia, ladies and gentlemen, is alcohol. It's a no-no. And even nicotine. Denise, did you ever quit smoking yet?
Almost. I'm down to just a couple when I just have too much going on. But, yeah. The other thing, Doug, is keeping a thermos. You mentioned coffee, but a really good thing is just water with some lemon in it, you know, lemon slices that has a lot of nutrients in it. You know, hot chocolate has caffeine, too, just as well as coffee. I remember when I was high school and it got cold, and going to football games, you know, we took thermoses with lemonade, warm lemonade.
That's not too bad an idea. Warm lemonade probably would be good, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it keeps your throat lubricated, keeps you hydrated. It's got some vitamins in it. You know, lemonade or just water with the lemon in it, you know, just a little bit of taste to it. It soothes the throat. That's a good idea. Gosh, what else? Be sure you have your emergency equipment in your car, jumper cables.
Yeah, we could go through that. I got the emergency list here for the cars
and the flares.
Yeah.
And you want to use those, you know, if you get trapped and they're searching for you. You know, it's just like in the military, we have our flares for, you know, evacuation type purposes. So those are good to have. The chem lights, very good to have.
Yeah, one thing, again, and you've already pointed out from the crisis we had out there, if you do get strapped in your car, stay with your car. You can keep the car running as long as you keep, you know, the tailpipe and everything clear again, crack your window just a little bit, you know, again, for, maintaining everything. But, again, stay with your car. It's really critical. I'm looking, again, at the recommendations. I pulled this off from the Wisconsin site as far as a winter survival kit. And, obviously, you want to have a shovel, a nice shovel in the car, windshield scraper and a broom to get the snow off and to scrape the ice off, a flashlight with extra batteries. One of the things you have to remember, in cold weather, the batteries start losing their juice. I mean, again, battery works when it's warm, but it starts getting colder, it doesn't function as well.
You can pick up the ones that you hand crank.
Yeah, I've got those for my truck and my car. They're incredible.
Those are great for emergency. There's all kinds of devices now that you can use, plug into your cigarette lighter if you still have battery power. There's little devices that will give you enough charge if your battery's dead that you plug it into the cigarette lighter and you can get your car started.
Yeah, and then you've got, again, the same thing. Use the battery-powered radio or, again, the hand crank radio. Both of those come, a lot of times those come together. You can buy that set. Obviously, keep some water available. I mean, you know, if it gets too cold, but you need to have water. You need to have foods in your, snack foods in there, including energy bars, raisins. I mean, trail mix is great, isn't it? You've made trail mix with raisins and nuts
right.
And all that before, right?
Those are great.
The
Breathless aisle has a lot of things. Breathless bars, things like that.
Yeah.
Something small, convenient, but high power.
Yeah, again, matches and small candles. I mean, obviously, hats and socks and mittens. A first aid kit. I mean, you and I, again, being medical types, I don't think I've ever been out without a major first aid kit. But my first aid kit that I've always carried, and you've seen it before, you know, and you use it yourself, I mean, is basically an EMT paramedic kit. Obviously, your medications and blankets or sleeping bag, chains and ropes, tow chains, tow ropes, and then also tire chains. We don't see tire chains used that much anymore because a lot of the tires now are all season, all weather, aren't they?
Yeah, but you know, you can still get stuck, and they're still used for those tire chains.
You have to
have
chains. The
other thing I would suggest is, remember, if you have floor mats, you might have to use those up against the tire to give you a little traction if you get stuck. Things like that. Something that the tire can get up on and have some traction to get you out of a snow.
Again, that's where you got the road salt or the sand. You can get those, 25-30-pound bags. Cat litter is great also.
Yeah, it's a lot more convenient. It comes in big plastic containers now. And I want to say that having been trained by the American Red Cross, that the American Red Cross, most of their chapters have emergency kits you can buy, or you can buy them online. And they're usually pretty daggum well stocked and, you know, has everything you need in it, whole variety of them. You can buy them online. I've looked at ones in, you know, department stores and stuff like that, and they just don't have what the Red Cross packs into theirs. And they usually have one of the, you can get a poncho. Get a bright colored poncho because you can use that for signaling in the snow.
Yeah. Booster cables, obviously jumper cables are essential, aren't they?
Yes.
I mean, again, we got to look at it. Remember, we have to remember, ladies and gentlemen, under cold weather, that battery might be good under warm weather, but as it starts cooling off, the battery chemistry just messes up and the batteries do not function as well. And when you start getting down to zero and below zero Fahrenheit, I mean, we're starting to get into real trouble, aren't we?
Well, Doug, there's one that's really affordable. I don't want to put an ad out, but I got one for my daughter because They had a tree come down on one of their electrical wires, and they were out of power at the house, couldn't do their law school work. And I got one for about a little over $50, and it will pump up your tires. It will charge. You can use it, you know, plug it in the house and use it in the house. It'll charge up. You can carry it in your car and then use it to start your car. It had jumper cables attached to it.
Yeah, we had one of those, too, here, and we've had that and carried those. Emergency flares
and reflectors.
Keep them
charged up.
Yeah, emergency flares and reflectors, again, you've already mentioned that. I mean, really critical. You can get the right standard flares. You got the chem lights, all of these new things that would come out.
And the other thing is a lot of people have cell phones. Use it sparingly if you can get through. You want to keep an idea of where you're at every time you drive around. Keep an idea of where you're at. So if you have to call an emergency, you can give them a mile marker or, you know, highway was 2 miles back, whatever. The other thing that I found, I got for my daughter for Christmas, this was one of the ideas I got this year for emergency supplies. And there's a little gadget called the Halo. And she's already used it. Her cell phone ran down one night. I don't know why, but she had her little Halo thing charged up. And, boy, it charged that phone in no time flat.
Wow.
It cost about $24, but it came in a set of two. So you could get one for your wife and one for you.
Yeah, the other thing, too, is critical, and this is where it happened out there with that family. If you're going to be traveling or go anyplace, let somebody else know where you're going, what your route is, what your expected arrival times are, departure times, so, you know, somebody can be looking for you. I know with the, I mean, we're in near blizzard, we are in blizzard conditions out here in East Central Illinois, and towns are far and few between when you get out of the Chicago metro area down where I live. And you get into these cold weather temperatures and the wind blowing, it's hard for you to tell any distance at all. And as far as being able to walk any distance, I mean, houses out here are a mile or 2 miles apart.
And keep some dry socks. Throw some dry socks in that emergency kit, because if your feet get wet, you're going to get hypothermia quickly. So you want, you know, roll up some socks, throw them in, just keep them there for an emergency. If you have to start a fire, they're great kindling, too.
Yeah, again, that's going wearing snow boots, not regular shoes. I mean, ladies and gentlemen, regular shoes or tennis shoes in their winter month are not going to work. You need to get the insulated boots. You've got some that are waterproof. I mean, obviously, you can get the big, heavy rubber ones. The Northerner, again, were one thing that a lot of us had. You can get the winter packs. I mean, these are the insulated, waterproof snow packs that you can wear. And take those with you if you need to change clothes once you get to your destination or change your shoes. It's easy to do that.
The other thing is people don't think about it, but, gosh, you know, if you got a roll of plastic, throw it in there. Because if you really get in a dire situation, wrap your body up in the plastic. Wrap the legs, wrap the abdomen, and it'll hold some of your body heat in.
Aluminum foil, a roll of aluminum foil would work great, wouldn't it?
I think the plastic probably works better.
Well, you know, you got the combination. I think the old, what we call the space blankets, they were a combination of aluminum and plastic, weren't they?
Mm-hmm.
I think they sell those. Red Cross, I think that includes that in their pack, don't they?
I think they do.
Very, very critical. Again, you know, where you're going to go, what you're doing, stay wherever you're at. Don't go out trying to walk. I mean, one of the problems we've had out here in my rescue days is somebody got out walking, and then they couldn't walk very far, and they got disoriented, and they got lost, because when you can't see the stars, the sky, the moon, don't know what direction you are, and the wind is blowing, the snow's blowing, it's real easy for you to get lost where you are at and just kind of walk in circles. Boy, you're going to end up no place at all.
You know, and what we're saying also goes for pilots. Small planes, keep your emergency gear in your planes, guys.
You just don't go flying in weather like this.
Yeah, they probably wouldn't be, but you never know. Some of the crazy people that get up.
You know, back in my days, obviously when we were in the military, both you and I flying for the Air Force, we did go flying in extremely cold weather under horrible conditions, but that was military flying, not civilian flights.
Right.
Survival tips, okay. Oh, keeping your gas tank always at least half full. Boy, you never know how far you go. You might stand out if you get stranded, and you all of a sudden you're being okay, but then you run out of gas, and now you're into deep doo-doo. So keep your gas tank always at least half full during the winter months. Also, that's really good as far as evaporative and everything else. There's not so much we have any more problems with the cars where we have the freeze-up in the carburetor, but the older cars, we did have freeze-up in the carburetor during the winter months. And again, we don't have that problem because a lot of the gasolines have alcohol in them today, so that's the same thing as what we used to put in there. If you get stuck, here's your flag that you mentioned, Denise. Put it up there on that antenna. Hang it out a window. Somebody can see you. Again, watching what's new and staying with your vehicle. Don't walk in the storm. Overexertion. Oh, my. What problems are we seeing with all the veterans? We have incredible neuromuscular problems, don't we?
Yeah. The neuromuscular problems are a tremendous problem. And, you know, it goes for civilians, too, that have neurological problems or cardiac problems or, you know, multiple sclerosis, all those. You have to be aware. And like I said, the best thing is camp out at home. You know, a lot of schools close, you know, government offices close when it gets so bad. And be aware, you know, don't park under a tree. You know, the common sense thing, that tree's getting loaded with ice and snow and limbs break and they'll crush your car. We've had that happen before in the news.
You know,
so common sense, you know.
Let's come on back. I mean, you spent some time in cardiac nursing, didn't you?
Yeah, and the one thing I say is if you've had any history of cardiac, please don't get out in the weather. If you go out, limit your time, you know, because the most cardiacs that happen was usually when somebody got out and it was so cold, and it happens with these blizzards, and they're trying to clear their driveway. Well, you know, park the car at the end of the driveway. Don't, you know, have to clear the whole driveway. Think about that beforehand. I went through, you know, that when my husband had surgery. And, you know, we kept the car cleared off and parked it toward the end of the driveway, so we only had the little area that we had to clear out. And just don't let anybody, you know, check on your neighbors, you know, if they're older, even 50s, you know. You know, help them out if you're younger. If your kids are younger, get them out and help them out. That's so important to check on neighbors and people down the block from you or down the road from you. You know them. You've seen them driving by at least. And, you know, think of them when the weather's cold and check on them.
Can you go over some of the signs and symptoms of cardiac?
Well, you know, the typical symptom, and this is the typical one, you've got pressure. It may feel like, you know, upset stomach. Don't let it fool you. If that pressure doesn't go away quickly, you need to get checked out. Usually it's pressure, it feels like an elephant sitting on you. Or you may feel indigestion. You get pains down your arms, up your neck. You can have any of these symptoms alone, too. The other thing on cardiac, and from my husband as a critical care nurse, I beat myself up over and over again because I had noticed that he was tired more. He came home and, you know, got in his recliner and didn't move around too much. And there was a different coloring to his skin. It was a paler color. Don't put it off, people. I've had, you know, after my husband went through this, I was at a congressional meeting, and one of the guys that had been Air Force and FAA and had gone and flying with a small airlines, he was back home, and we were sitting down eating, and we were talking about my husband. And I told him, I said, you know, the main thing was the fatigue, the tired, the different coloring he had. And, you know, luckily, you know, we live right down the street from a hospital. I mean, half a block and we're in the ER. But he went back out to California. He had a doctor's appointment and had canceled it. Well, he went to sleep and didn't wake up, died of cardiac. And, you know, don't put it off, people. And in the cold weather, it can hit fast. because your body's trying to meet the needs of the circulation and circulating the blood to the extremities, and you're getting cold. And like I said, the heart and the whole body does not like cold water. We're not really built for cold weather.
It's kind of the same thing, and I mean, keeping dry, I can't overemphasize enough. I know one of the things that I do, and I always have this, and again, this goes back to the ski things. People don't think about it. All a skier do, we got our snow bibs and everything else, our snow pants. I mean, those things are really critical. Have them big enough to where you can slip over your other clothes and keep you warm, but again, not constricting everything. I mean, I ran into a sporting goods store here right before Christmas, and I got myself a beautiful pair of, well, hunting snow bibs are in the, you know, the white color and all this are really pretty, and I had those on earlier today. And those are, you know, big and they're warm and everything else, but that's all, again, buying the criticals. A parka, a good parka with a hood on it. I mean, some people have a small jacket that barely doesn't cover up everything. You want to have it where it covers the whole body. You want to have the back of the head and the neck covered by a hood, or get a wool cap or something like this. Or, again, one of those big old hats that, you know, with the wool in there that flows down all over the whole head. And they look kind of like a baby's cap or old pilot's cap, I think, is what
right.
You think about. Those things are incredibly good. Gloves are really important. You can have the gloves with the fingers, but, again, a good insulated mitten is better because the fingers are next to each other. They can keep each other warm. And then the other thing, too, is you don't have the constriction. Because anytime you start getting constriction, you start affecting blood flow. You start affecting blood flow. It's already, restricted to the body when it's cold out to the extremities anyhow, shunting it back. So now you're getting into trouble really, really fast.
Yeah, and it doesn't take long. It does not take long to get frostbite.
Yeah, frostnip. Let's talk a little bit. Frostnip is a cold injury in which the chilled areas of skin become numb, swollen, and red. And again, what you need to do is just warming again. Again, the frostnip, it kind of, tingles, doesn't it? The person reports a tingling?
Yeah, the tingling comes first, and then it becomes numb.
Immersion foot, trench foot, oh, my God. That's affected how many military since antiquity?
Yeah.
I mean, all of us have had that problem in one time or another. A lot of us that were in Vietnam had that problem. We saw that over in Desert Storm also, and we're going to continue to see it. Again, immersion foot or trench foot is a cold injury that develops when the foot is kept in wet, cold socks and boots for several days. Again, the skin is breaking up, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, you've got to think. Your extremities are going to be hit first because they're further away from the heart. So you do want to take special care. That's why I said gloves with inserts, with the warmer, hand warmer chemical packs. They're not that expensive to have available at any time. You want to, be sure to, you might have to use several layers of socks. They do have special socks that are inserts that you wear, right next to your skin, and then you put socks over it. So, those are the critical items. When you get frostbite, it's usually hands, feet. It's not
your
usually
ears
the
and
whole
your nose.
Body. Right.
All this stuff. Chilblains. Chilblains is another common reaction that occurs when the repeated exposure to the cold. Symptoms include itching, pain, and rare cases, discolored areas or blisters are going to form, especially on the leg. Again, the condition is uncomfortable, and again, what you do is, again, warming and everything else, trying to take care of everything. Well, those are the things start happening. Frostbite gets into a problem, doesn't it? This is where the actual tissue starts to freeze.
Right.
Boy. Dangerous, dangerous situation, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And the other thing is people that aren't used to snow and ice driving, it may look like it's dry, but, if there's clear, shiny areas on a road, that's ice, babe.
That's black ice. So it's called black ice, isn't it?
Right.
And I know we just had a problem here on Interstate 74 through Champaign-Urbana. We had rain and snow here the other day, and it was very cold, and temperatures dropped down to 10 to 15 degrees, and the road salt wouldn't work at those temperatures, and what we had on the bridges was incredible ice, and cars were just sliding and crashing all over, and they actually had to shut down the interstate because of the number of accidents. So anytime you're driving over bridges or anything like this, they're going to cool faster, and the ice is going to form a lot faster than on just a straight ground, isn't it?
Right. And let me tell you, the most dangerous is down in Texas when they get an ice storm. I can remember, you know, in college, and I was up in the Dallas area, and we had an ice storm. I was living outside of Dallas, Denton, which isn't that far, and driving into Dallas. Well, let me tell you, I checked with the highway patrol and everything, and they said their roads were clear and they didn't get work. Well, let me tell you, 360s in a car are not fun.
I remember being in Wilford Hall Hospital right there in San Antonio and looking out the window there at the interstate and in the winter months, and the cars sliding and crashing into each other.
It's in, you know, Texas, the highways, they build overpasses, so you're going up and you come back down and you see the line of cars off to the side, and the first person is getting pushed out by the others, you know. So they're not used to that. I remember coming back to Texas from Massachusetts, and I had shovels. Well, I think I must have jinxed Texas that year because we had snow in San Antonio, and no one had snow shovels except us.
Yeah, they're not prepared down there, are they?
No. No, not at all.
Well, when a person gets frostbite, that's a true medical emergency, and they've going to have to get into the hospital because the doctor's going to have to warm it up gently. He's going to have to use all of the medical knowledge and medical skills he has to get the tissue to survive, because with frostbite, you actually got death of the tissue, don't you?
Yeah, you do. Usually end up with having to have skin transplants and all that, and some people lose fingers from frostbite. Or parts of their fingers. So it is a critical time of the year, and if you're in the southern states and you get hit, you're not used to it. My best advice, like I've said three times now, I think, is stay at home. The roads and the equipment in some places are not geared up for it. Certainly in Texas, they weren't geared up for it. I think it was a very costly thing because the buses got out, and they had so much damage to the buses, it cost the city a lot of money. So the best thing is, you know, have your store of food at home, and don't go out if you don't have to. You know, that's common sense.
One of the things, again, we're coming back, keeping out again. What we have is we start getting the cold temperatures, and we start putting the wind together. We're going to have the rapid cooling again, and we got the wind chills chart. And ladies and gentlemen, I highly suggest you can go onto the Internet. National Weather Service has a wind chill chart, and again, pick this up and look at it. But anytime we start getting into the very cold temperatures, we're saying we're getting 10 or 15 degrees ambient temperature, and we start getting into the wind speeds of 20 to 25 miles an hour, we're talking about getting into serious problems pretty rapidly within 10 minutes, aren't we?
Yeah.
And so it doesn't take long. So even with proper clothing, when you get these high winds and these super cold temperatures, we're talking about getting into trouble. Now, one thing here in East Central Illinois and through the Midwest right now, they're talking at ambient temperatures tonight of somewhere around minus 10 to minus 15 degrees. And they're also talking that we're talking about 15 to 20 mile an hour winds. Well, we're talking about an effective temperature of minus 20 to 25 to 30 to 35 degrees. And without proper clothing, you're talking about just a few minutes before the body's going to cool down or get in and into trouble. So again, that's the whole reason if you got to go, don't go out unless it's absolute emergency. Don't go anyplace unless it's an absolute emergency. And stay in, stay warm, and keep dry.
The other thing is, you know, if you have a cell phone, put the emergency phone numbers in it if you do have to travel. Besides 911, if you're going to be on a highway, you might want the highway patrol number on. You know, those things we don't think about.
Don't most states now have the road conditions where you can look it up on the computer or you can call on the phone and get road conditions?
Yeah, most of the states, I think, do. So it's important to have those numbers.
Yeah, so that you know what's going on. I mean, it's just, it doesn't take much to get into trouble with these temperatures. Again, we're coming back to the same thing.
And the other thing is, on the phone, you know, you can code and coded ICE in case of emergency, and you might put an ICE number down of where you were headed, what the end destination was, so they can notify, you know, quickly that you've been delayed or what have you. And even then, they can help you in an emergency if you haven't been able to get through. Tell them where you're at, have your mind about you, and, you know, they can help you by calling, too.
Now, one of the things, again, just because it's winter months and everything, even under a healthy day when we don't have blizzards conditions or blowing snow, obviously, I mean, around you, I love to get out skiing, either cross-country or downhill skiing. We like the snowboard and everything else. You like to get out on the sleds and pull the sleds or go down the hill. All the stuff you have to be properly prepared and dressed for, don't you, and proper nutrition all the time.
Yeah, and if you're backcountry skier, please get the avalanche detector device that they have available now, because with changing weather, we have a lot of avalanches up in Colorado, and I don't think we go through one season without losing somebody.
What are the avalanche conditions? I mean, it's so many years ago, and when I did skiing, I was skiing on the groomed slopes, whether it was in Colorado or Washington State or Wisconsin or Illinois.
You get it a lot when the weather's changing and the different layers of snow, and you may have some snow one day and some wet rain the next day, sleet, that freezes, and then you get more snow, and you have different layers, and those different layers break is what happens, and then the whole thing starts going bad.
So in other words, the snow is layered off. You have a solid section of snow and then a freezing layer and then another solid section of snow, and these different layers of snow are not locked together, are they?
No, they really aren't. Can be very deceptive, and like I said, I don't think we go through one season here in Colorado without a loss due to avalanche, and they can occur mostly in the backcountry. You don't normally have them on the groomed slopes, but people get off the groomed tracks and trails, and you get into trouble.
And rescue efforts for something like that during an avalanche is pretty critical and pretty dangerous and very difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And we've got so many volunteers with their dogs and with the long poles that they form a line and just go down the slope trying to find the body, you know,
yeah,
and get to them.
Now, what the detector, you've got a device you can put on the body again that starts emitting if you get caught, like a radio signal to find people.
Right.
And then what other devices are there that you have available?
Well, you know, one thing that you try to tell people is they get caught in that, try to make a little tunnel of air with your arms up, you know, in front of your face, and have them folded outward, you know, bent, so that you can make kind of a hole so you have a little air trap there.
Well, again, we're looking at the same thing. I mean, we got all the neuromuscular and cervical spine injuries on the veterans, so if they're going to go up there doing skiing and everything, again, sprains and strains and fractures can happen a lot easier on them, can't they?
Definitely. You know, when they take the handicapped vets up, they have guides. They have people stationed along the path just in case. They're to help them. And just, you know, you can't overestimate common sense, inventiveness, whatever you can think in a critical state, that will save your life. And don't panic, but use your common sense and your intuitive senses.
You know, I know in my old days that the thing, you know, not directly a part of, but working with the ski patrol when we had to bring people down on the sledge, again, you had to get them taken care of, get the break, the fracture stabilized, get them loaded in the sled, and then bring them on down the slope, and that was really difficult. Up there in the mountains, I mean, you worked at the hospital up there. Do you guys have medical evacuation where they have helicopters?
They have helicopter crews that are trained, and if they can get in, they will. But a lot of times they've got to sled them down to an area where they can access. So, you know, people just, I can't overemphasize common sense. Be prepared. Be prepared at home. You know, have emergency lights readily available. Know where they're at. You know, I don't have a generator. We haven't had to have one, but we have a fireplace. other things that we can use to keep warm. And I just highly recommend, think ahead. It's kind of like it was a weird gift to give the daughter, but the generator that she can use for the car or at home, you know, think about that. Those are life-saving equipment.
Now, one thing I do have, living out in the country we have here, we're kind of at the end of the power lines. I do have a major generator that will generate, you know, enough power. It's in the barn, in the closet. You can't have that where it's going to put anywhere near any of the fumes, you know, carbon monoxide into the house or into the garage or anywhere it's going to get in. So you have that in a separate building. And what they have done here, again, in the rural areas, they'll have a generator out in an accessory building, and then it'll be hardwired into your board, and then you have a major switch where you switch between the line power and the generator power. One of the problems we've had here, and again with tornadoes and everybody, people go and hook up a generator into the main line without a switch, and then all of a sudden somebody else went, well, the power's dead on that line, and it's not because they got a generator. And now we got a person getting zapped again. So again, being very careful how you hook up a generator, how you use one in the winter months is very critical. I've got a giant craft stove sitting here about 15 feet from where I am. That'll heat the whole house. It's got an iron box, and it's got the heating box on the inside. And then it's got an outside plenum chamber, again, with a fan to work with it. That's different than a standard fireplace, though.
Yes. Yeah, we had a wood-burning furnace. We had, in Massachusetts, we had the wood-burning furnace with a wood pile, and we had, you know, the heat air exchanger also. But our wood furnace, it was a doozy. It would heat the whole house.
But again, you have to maintain that you got the exhaust systems there to take all the carbon monoxide out of the house and not get it entered into the house.
Oh, yes, and people living in the north, get your chimneys cleaned. When I was in Massachusetts, it was almost as common up there as anywhere else of chimney fires. So you have to, you know, clean your chimneys.
Yeah, the creosote builds up in there, the tars and all that build up in the chimneys, don't they?
Yeah, they do, and there was, I remember the year we were up there was at least 3 or 4 on the news, and it burned the house down. So, you know, keep the maintenance on your chimneys clean. If you haven't had them cleaned, get them cleaned so that you can use a fireplace or a wood stove because they can be dangerous. Hey, we remember tents burning down from the tent heaters.
Well, yeah, that happened too many times. I mean, I've got some incredible stories we could tell all day long about winter operations in the good old G.P. Small and, you know, in the Yukon stove, but that's another time and another date. On your standard furnace, again, maintaining your furnace and make sure that's all well working well and everything else, changing the air filters. I just change the air filters. Living where we live, we change the air filters about every 2 to 3 weeks, definitely every month for sure, because dust and everything get clogged up and don't you get adequate airflow on your forced air systems.
And also you want to check around your house where the vents come out and keep them cleared of snow.
Yeah, that's a really good idea.
Because people forget to do that.
Yeah, you know, we got a dryer vent, don't we? If you got electric or gas dryer, we need to have that exhaust vent always open. The same thing with the stoves, don't we?
Right. So you've got to check your vents and be sure they're properly maintained. Usually it doesn't take a whole lot. Just keep it clear of snow so you don't have gases build up in your house.
The other thing, too, and I've already done it a couple times today, our winds are coming out of the north-northwest here. So, again, I've had to go out and shovel the door, snow away from the doors so that we can get in and out of all the doors if necessary.
Right.
So, again, but if you're doing this, you got to wear the proper clothing and take your time, don't you?
Definitely.
You know, I mean, one of the problems you've seen, and you've repeatedly talked about this, we're seeing way too many cardiac problems in young veterans, aren't we?
Exactly. And it starts at an earlier age than I've ever seen it before. So please, you know, besides knowing your neighbors and seeing what age they are, if they're veterans, keep an eye on them. Their exposures to other toxins that they were around make them more susceptible.
Well, I hear the music.
We're getting close to the end of the show, I think.
Yeah, Denise, I want to thank you. I mean, I knew you were real busy when we talked earlier. You didn't know if you could make it or not. You get your daughter to the airport. You're getting ready for a major meeting in Washington, D.C. Can you give the contact information once more for the meeting and how to get to it and where it is?
Oh, my. I don't have that handy. I read it off already for anybody wanting a ride. If you want to listen, if you get on Facebook, we've put it on all the Gulf War veteran sites that you can call in and listen to the meeting. And possibly they try to open the line for public comment at the end of the day. So it starts at 8:30 every day on the 7th and the 8th. And the 8th would be a short day. It would be finished by probably 1 o'clock. So call in. You can also Google VA. RACGWIR, and you'll get the agenda there. And then if you can get on Facebook, I have it on my page. And like I said, we've got every Gulf War Vet page has the phone in number.
Well, Denise, thank you very much. Gary Noel and everybody, again, the Progressive Radio Network is moving forward. Winter survival has been the topic tonight, and also the upcoming RAC meeting. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Good evening.